This is Premier Global Services. Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Incitec Pivot Results Presentation Conference Call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, for opening remarks, I would like to turn the conference over to your moderator for today, Mr. Simon Atkinson. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Simon Atkinson, and today with me here in Sydney are Julian Siegel, our CEO, and James Fazzino, our CFO and Finance Director. For logistics reasons, this presentation is a teleconference only. Today there will be two distinct presentations, and I ask that your questions are framed accordingly. Firstly, we will shortly commence our review of the 2008 financial results, which will immediately be followed by a question and answer session. Following this presentation, we will be presenting another presentation, and those with the passwords will be able to continue on this line. Now, at the conclusion of this formal presentation, Julian and James will be happy to take questions. Just to remind you, we will be answering questions relating to the other presentation with that, and only questions with regard to the results on this initial call. Before I hand you over to Julian, I want to cover an important issue, which is to refer you to and ask you to read the disclaimers which appear on the second slide of each of the presentation packs. We will be going through these this morning. The first is headed Incitec Pivot Limit Full Year Results, and the second is headed Incitec Pivot Entitlement Offer. Everything we go through on this call, including the answers to the questions, is covered by those disclaimers, so please read them carefully. I'll now hand you over to Julian Siegel.
Thank you, Simon, and good afternoon. Turning to slide four of the presentation, I'm delighted to present another record result for IPL. This is a result that delivers on the promises we made this time last year, and once again is one that ticks all the boxes. In 2008, earnings before interest and tax more than tripled to a record of $969 million. Net profit, excluding individually material items, was also at a record level of $657 million. Once again, up more than three times on the prior year. Operating cash flow more than tripled to $823 million. We maintain our commitment to financial discipline with record low working capital at year-end and robust balance sheet and credit metrics. Hence, we're again in a strong position to take advantage of excellent opportunities to grow future earnings close to our core. James will provide you with a greater insight into the drivers of the financial result. What I would like to do now is to briefly reflect on the key points underpinning these strong results. Turning now to slide 5. This slide shows NPAT and EPS for the period 2005 to 2008, which of course reflects the period during which we have implemented the strategy of lowest cost base on the product, on the resource, trading and supply chain. Over that time, profit has increased by about 14 times. The record profit this year was driven by the same strategy. It was delivered by our people, who had to overcome many obstacles, such as lack of rain in some areas and floods in others. But in the typical IPL way, they kept their promise and got things done. The result for 2008 was the best yet, with profit up over three times to $657 million. 89% of this profit was generated from manufacturing, which we have built up in line with our own the product strategy. What is personally pleasing is that we can clearly demonstrate the delivery of value from pursuing our strategy. Turning to slide 6. A successful strategy is successful only in the specific environment it was designed to take advantage of. Naturally, we review our strategy on an ongoing basis to ensure it is still valid for the environment in which you operate. Given recent events, we have just updated this review, and I'm pleased to report that the fundamentals underpinning our strategy remain intact. Food consumption is not cyclical. Specifically, not consumption of staple food. Our products are not an input to truffle growing, but to the basics of wheat, rice and corn.
Excuse me, operator, could you just check that everybody is on the line, please? We're getting comments that there are people hearing hold music.
Absolutely, sir. I understand that there are some callers still joining. We do have a large number at the moment.
Okay, we'll continue. Thank you, George.
Thank you.
World population is still increasing at a net rate of over 200,000 people a day. The conditions that resulted in food shortage riots only a few months ago have not altered at all. We'll show this more clearly on the next slide. The explosive business is exposed to mining volumes, not prices. North America power demand is not cyclical. The U.S. retail market for electricity consumes some 4 billion megawatt hour every year. 50% of this is generated by coal-fired power stations, consuming about 1 billion tons of coal per year. The likely government reaction to the global financial crisis is to increase, not decrease, infrastructure spending. Good news for our quarry and construction business. China and India growth is still 3 to 4 times the long-run trend for developed countries. In summary, the fundamentals supporting our business remain intact through the economic cycle because our products service basic human needs. The graph on slide 7 shows global grain stocks expressed in week of consumption for the last 18 years. The slide shows that stocks remain at record lows, or in simple terms, the world is around 10 weeks away from a significant global food crisis. Against this background, agricultural commodity prices, including inputs, appear to be oversold and should rebound. Turning to slide 8, DAP is both an important variable impacting our business and important input to farming. IPL does not forecast DAP prices. Instead, we look to industry economies such as CRU for the long-term trends. Looking at the long term, the graph on this slide shows the CRU forecast in blue. Of course, what is important to IPL is the combination of both DAP and the Australian dollar. So we have added the Australian dollar equivalent, assuming a 7 cents dollar in red. As you can see, CRU's forecast is for DAP price to soften around US$800 per ton in 2009 and then gradually reduced to around US$500 to US$600 in 2012 when Ma'aden comes online. Importantly, when you look at the same prices expressed in Australian dollars, you see the price actually increasing to about US$1200 a ton in 2009 and thereafter softening to about US$800 by 2012. In Australian dollar terms, this is consistent with the view we expressed in May. I would note that in practice, the price will move in a band around CRU's estimates. For example, demand is always soft at this time of the year, and hence so is pricing. Demand starts to ramp up from December, when Latin America comes back into the market, and reaches its peak from February to July, when India, Latin America, and U.S. farmers are buying. I will now hand over to James, who will take you through the financials in more detail.
Thank you, Julian, and good afternoon. Turning to slide 10 of our pack, this slide shows our key financials on a before individually material items basis. Looking at EBITDA and EBIT, both of those tripled to $1.039 billion and $969 million respectively, another record result for Incitec Pivot. NPAT was up $455 million to $657 million for the year. Looking at capital management, while net debt increased through the funding of the Dyno Nobel acquisition and also the Moranbah expenditure, our capital disciplines remained intact. We finished the year with an investment-grade credit metrics of net debt to EBITDA of 1.95 times and interest cover of 15.8 times. I would note that the net debt to EBITDA number includes all of the funding for Dyno, but only 3.5 months of Dyno Nobel's EBITDA. To demonstrate what has been delivered in 2008, I will review the composition of the results in each of the contributing businesses separately over the next few slides. Turning to slide 11, this slide reconciles the change in EBITDA from $348.6 million in 2007 to $1,039,000,000 in 2008 for the combined group. Pleasingly, earnings were up in all of our businesses. I'll now take you through the key movements in each of those businesses. Turning to slide 12, let me start by taking you through the Southern Cross numbers. This slide shows a comparison of 2007 EBITDA of $208.9 million and 2008 EBITDA of $596.5 million. Looking at the components of the waterfall, the DAP price bar on this graph is hard to miss. The average realised DAP price of $921 per tonne was $557 per tonne higher than in 2007, and this added $568 million to EBITDA. Higher international freight rates and a favourable mix of domestic sales over exports improved the profitability of Southern Cross by a further $48.3 million. Countering these favourable movements, the realised Australian dollar price was an average 14 cents higher at an average of 95.3 cents compared to 81.3 cents last year, and this reduced EBITDA by $154.6 million. As disclosed to the market in March and June, production disruptions at Mount Isa and Phosphate Hill lost us approximately 144,000 tonnes. And that cost us $50.4 million for the year. Sales volumes in total were 828,000 tonnes, and we would expect to post an improvement to 900,000 tonnes in 2009. And the 2009 number allows for our planned three-yearly shut in July. I'm pleased to report that performance of the plant post the phosphoric acid plant tank outage in June has been outstanding, with record production at both our Phosphate Hill and Mount Isa sites in the last quarter, above nameplate capacity. Sulfuric acid costs were also up $31.3 million, and that's consistent with the global prices of sulphur. This is in line with our forecasts in May of $30 million cost for the year. With sulphur prices now significantly lower than their peak, we would expect this cost to reduce in 2009, albeit I'd note under our contracts with a lag. In summary, this was a mixed result for the period. However, I'd have to say that EBITDA contribution just shy of $600 million, which is four times the purchase price of Southern Cross, is a reasonable result. Turning to slide 13 and looking at DAP in more detail, it is important to understand that Australian dollar DAP prices drive Southern Cross's profit and not US dollar headline prices. On this slide, we show US dollar DAP prices in blue and the impact of the Australian dollar exchange rate in red. Taking our 2008 realised DAP price and realised exchange rate, Australian dollar prices realised were $968 a tonne. As an illustration, and this demonstrates the importance of both currency and the DAP price, the US dollar headline price could fall to $678 per tonne for 2009, and we would still be the same year on year, assuming a rate of 70 cents. Turning now to slide 14, let me take you through the value drivers of the Australian fertiliser and our industrial chemicals business. EBITDA more than doubled from $139.7 million in 2007 to $333.4 million in 2008. Looking at the major reconciling items, firstly, the often forgotten manufacturing profit engines of Gibson Island and our SSP plants, where EBITDA contribution was up $114.2 million, and this reflects the higher import parity price for both of those. Although, I would note, as like DAP, it's the Aussie dollar price that's important rather than the headline global prices. we achieved $35.3 million in Tartas benefits and an increased contribution from our trading business of $41.7 million. Moving now to the Velocity and turning to page 15 of our pack, the Velocity program is based on the proven Tartas blueprint for business improvement. And of course, that is central to our business model and a core competency of Incitec Pivot. Page 16 summarises the Velocity benefits. We have a target of $204 million involving 350 initiatives across five streams, and this is expected to be delivered in 3 years. So by 2011, we will have delivered increased earnings in the business by $204 million. Also, in addition, as part of the program, we are targeting to reduce the capital intensity of the business by $200 million. The Velocity initiatives were identified at 16 RONA workshops that we've ran in North America and Australia. The workshops were attended by around about 20% of our global workforce in Dyno Nobel. The good news is Velocity comes from a pool of 2,800 business improvement opportunities, so there is still plenty of scope for improvement over and above the initial program. Looking at the streams in more detail, page 17 shows Stream 1 overhead reduction, which is targeted to deliver savings of US$57.4 million. In terms of the key projects, firstly, we have the closure of the Australian corporate office of Dyno Nobel. This is complete. Secondly, there is the restructure of the Canadian business. That is also complete. Thirdly, we have the restructure of the North American business and global functions. The restructure was announced on the 23rd of October and will be completed no later than the 31st of March. Turning to insurance, I can report that we have already delivered savings of around US$5 million. That was achieved by rolling Dyno Nobel into our global program. Turning to page 18, plant efficiency projects are targeted to deliver US$62.9 million in efficiencies by 2011. Global engineering and process optimization and control relate to the scale benefits of the acquisition, which have allowed us to put together a global shutdown, engineering and process optimization group operating out of Gibson Island in Australia. That group is in place today, and we can report that some of the best practice learnings were shared from the GI reset in 2007 to the recent Cheyenne reset that we've just completed. The results were the Cheyenne reset was completed quicker than would normally be the case for lower cost. So this is a real benefit. On the right-hand side of the slide, you can see what we've been able to achieve at Gibson Island by using these techniques. And you can see the increase in the uptime of the ammonia plant. And what we intend to do is achieve similar increases throughout Dyno Nobel in North America. Rationalisation of products and plants focuses primarily on our initiating systems business. In particular, it'll address the amount of SKUs that we manufacture and also the loading of the IS plants up and down North America. Product formulation and product development includes standardising formulations and utilising lower cost inputs such as recycled oil in ANFO mixes rather than virgin oil. Page 19 shows Stream 3, which we call Cost to Serve, and this has targeted benefits of US$51 million. We've just completed a business-wide Cost to Serve study, and that study has for the first time allowed Dyno Nobel to understand the true profitability of individual sites and individual customer contracts. In terms of the key initiatives, firstly, the title of the first initiative, Salesforce Effectiveness, Value Not Just Volume, will be familiar for those of you who have followed the Tartas program. This involves a major cultural shift in the sales force in North America and their mindset from a mindset based on volume and market share to one focused on creating value not only for the customer, but also for Dyno Nobel. In summary, there is simply no point in making a sale if all we do is write a check from our shareholders to our customers' shareholders. Secondly, addressing unprofitable contracts. The cost of service study has shown that we lose money on every ton that we supply to our two largest customers in the United States and Canada. And just importantly, we've also found that the further we move downstream from pure manufactured products, we lose value. We've previously experienced and addressed this type of issue in our fertilizer business, and we'll intend the same rigor and discipline to Dyno Nobel. We are immediately changing the supply agreements where we can to adjust the contracts so that they're profitable, and we're confident that we can improve the unprofitable contracts when they expire and come to a more equitable sharing of benefits for the value of both ourselves and our customers. However, I'd note we've assumed no heroic pricing increases in the velocity benefits. Logistics optimization relates to improving the productivity of our trucking fleet and assets on our smaller sites. And a good example is the work we've just completed at our Scott City site in Missouri. And there we've found that we've been able to reduce the capital intensity on that site by 40% and improve the profitability of that site by 25%. And I'd note that is only one site of 48 that we've gotten in the business, so there are 47 more opportunities to go. Slide 20 shows Stream 4, which relates to the global supply chain, and there we're targeting benefits of $32.7 million. In terms of the key projects, the first rather obvious initiative involves running all of our AN plants in North America at capacity and using our trading business to export excess tonnes to our global customers. And this reflects the strength of our combined business model. So for example, in 2009, we'll export 150,000 tonnes of AN from our eastern US plants to Australia, and this in part will service our Moranbah customers. This will generate around about $15 million in profit in Australia and additional plant efficiency gains in the US. And it's a great example of the benefits of using IPL's global supply chain, in that we're able to piggyback on fertilizer imports from the US in order to achieve the shipping rates that makes this a sensible thing to do. Other initiatives also include procurement. Turning to page 21, this shows Stream 5, asset intensity. And here we're targeting to reduce the capital intensity of business by US $200 million over 3 years. In terms of the key projects, the first one is reducing working capital. And in a nutshell, what we're trying to do is achieve a similar reduction in working capital to sales in Dyno as to what we've just achieved in Incitec Pivot. And the second initiative involves the sale of surplus assets. Turning now to slide 22, the slide on this page looks at working capital for Incitec Pivot. And in the graphs, we're showing our absolute investment in working capital as at the 30th of September each year for the years 2005 to 2008. What is very obvious is the progress we've made in reducing our working capital investment from around 31% to sales to 9% for sales. And this gives you some indication of the size of the opportunity in Dyno Nobel. Turning to 2009 project spending on slide 23, in summary, we're forecasting spending of $850 million in 2009. And this is a very similar number to the operating cash flow that we've generated in 2008. The detail is outlined on the slide, but in summary, $596 million is earmarked to build our plant capacity, the majority of which, of course, is Moranbah, $155 million to improve reliability of current production, and $100 million to fast-track velocity projects. And those projects have a payback of 3 years or less. I'll now hand back to Julian.
Thanks, James. Turning to page 25, I spent a day on site just over a year ago, and I feel very confident about this very important project, that is the Murrumba project. Murrumba construction is on track, on budget, on time, and consistent with our expectation when we announced this project less than 4 months ago. We have also commenced discussion with our customers for uncommitted volume. Turning to slide 26. While spot Baltic ammonium nitrate prices have fallen consistent with ammonia prices, this has been offset by the decline in the Australian dollar from 96 cents to 70 cents. While freight rates have dropped for general cargo, freight rates remain constant for small security-sensitive cargoes. This is a key point not well appreciated by observers of our industry, but clearly understood by its participants and customers. For new ammonium nitrate contract pricing, the value of local secure supply remains strong, and while commodity prices have been volatile, the value premium remains unchanged. Turning to slide 27, I would like now to make a few comments on a number of growth opportunities that are very close to our core. The Southern Cross debottlenecking project has two envisaged phases. Phase one involves an increase in sulfuric acid production capacity, resulting in DAP and MAP nameplate capacity increasing from 970 kilotons per year to 1,010 kilotons per year, an increase of 40,000 tons per year. The capital cost for this additional capacity is $26 million, resulting in a better than 36% internal rate of return. The timing of this project is the 2010 calendar year. Phase 2 involves the installation of a fifth filter in our phosphoric acid plant, which will push up production to 1,050,000 tons per year if market conditions justify such increase. The capital cost for phase 2 is $35 million, resulting in a 17% internal rate of return. The timing for this uprate is the quarter 4 of 2010. Turning to slide 26, the Gibson Island debottlenecking project is another one close to core. We will spend $20 million for 40,000 tons of production increase of urea at a return of 19% internal rate of return and 20% RONA. Both these projects are low-risk value creation close to core. Turning to slide 29. In summary, IPL delivered a record 2008 financial result. This was done through continued strong financial discipline and delivered by outstanding people. The 2009 outlook is significantly enhanced by the first full year of Dyno Nobel earnings and delivery of the Velocity projects. These results generate strong credit metrics and puts us in a strong position to take advantage of organic growth opportunities close to our core. As I explained earlier in my presentation, the industry and business fundamentals remain intact, with Australian dollar fertilizer prices currently stable year on year, as the softer global fertilizer prices are offset by the Australian dollar depreciation. Earnings seasonality is typically 30% in the first half and 70% in the second half. All this bodes well for the future as we continue to deliver on our promises. Thank you, and I will now turn the proceedings over to Simon.
Thank you, Julian. Thank you, James. We will now take questions via the operator. Again, I note that we will only answer questions relating to the 2008 performance on this particular call and any other and only on issues raised in this presentation. I'd ask that you hold all other questions to the second part. Operator?
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. We will proceed in the order in which you signal us, and we'll take as many questions as time permits. If you are using a speakerphone, please be sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone to ask a question. We'll now pause for a moment to assemble a queue. Your first question comes from Simon Mitchell of UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi. A question for James. Perhaps could you just run us through how you've accounted for onerous contracts that sit within Dyno, particularly the Moranbah Foundation contracts, and exactly what sort of provisions you're carrying on the balance sheet relating to Dyno?
Yeah, of course. Thank you very much for the question, Simon. In note 28, which is the business combination note to our account, we've shown the PPA accounting that we've done for Dyno. In that note, you'll notice that under other liabilities, there's an amount of $704 million. That amount relates to marking all the contracts in the business, including the Moranbah contract, to market and booking a liability for those that are unfavourable. Of that $704 million, the amount which we've calculated for Moranbah, and this is calculated at commodity prices that were current on the 16th of June 2008, was around about $500 million. The way the merger accounting works, if you take that $500 million and you amortise it over the life of the contracts. So that is very similar to what you'd do with a goodwill number, if you like, because the opposite side of this is clearly goodwill. Of course, we will only incur a fraction of that amount because we will build the Moranbah plant. And so we'll only incur cost of that for around about 2 years.
Okay, so just to clarify, the annual amount that gets carried through the P&L is a fixed amount per year. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Although, of course, it reduces in the outer years because the calculation you do is a discounted calculation.
Okay. Thank you.
The next question comes from Mark Wilson from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much. Just looking at the Dyno contribution, effectively, were there any one-offs in that component? Just sort of looking at the seasonality of the business and obviously when you are marking to market.
Yeah, thanks very much, Mark. Actually, there weren't any one-offs in that contribution. And in fact, we generated EBITDA of around about $110 million in the 3.5 months. Of course, that includes $10 million from Velocity. We're really pleased to report that was above expectation. As you rightly say, the second half of the year for Dyno is seasonally higher. But the only one-off adjustment, I guess, is there is around about $10 million, which what you have to do in terms of the acquisition accounting is mark your stocks to market. And so if we hadn't have done that, the profit would be $120 million.
Thanks.
We'll now move to our next question from Michael Ward from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. I've got a few quick questions. Just firstly, on the waterfall on chart on page 14, just wondering if you can give us a bit more detail around the manufacturing margin expansion in the base business, whether or not that's principally urea, reflecting a very strong run-up in urea prices, or if it's more SSP related.
Yeah, would you like me to answer that one first, Mike?
Yeah, that's fine. Yep.
Yeah, I will. The answer is it's about 50-50. So pretty much half was urea and half was SSP. And obviously the urea follows global prices, and the SSP follows DAP-type prices.
Because your cost of rock didn't really move, so did you effectively get a... I guess what I'm asking is, when does your rock, your beneficial rock contracts come to an end again?
Yeah, actually, the rock, of course, you benefit from what you had in the shed at the beginning of the year.
Yep.
We're pretty much buying rock every quarter, and so you get the quarterly reset. So there's an element of which there is one quarter where we've got that benefit of carryover stock.
Okay. Just another two quick questions. The timing of the benefit and the from Project Velocity and the potential capital releases that you're talking about, when would we expect to see those coming through?
Yeah, in terms of the timing of the benefits from Velocity, and I'll read out the numbers for you. In 2008, obviously, and these are cumulative numbers in US dollars.
Okay.
In 2008, we booked 9. In 2009, the cumulative number will be 67. In 2010, it'll be 151. And in 2011, it'll be 204 million. And of course, all of those are US dollars. In terms of the cash release, what we need to put in place is sales and operations planning in order to get the working capital down, because at the moment they don't plan their business. And so what that probably means is the majority of that is in 2010.
Okay.
And in 2011. So, you know, if you wanted to put something in your model, you might put, I don't know, 100 million in 2010 and 100 million in 2011.
I assume the working capital release isn't the majority of that 200?
The working capital is around about $50 million.
Yeah. Okay.
And the capital release is 150, and that's a range of, you know, truck sales and site sales for the ones that we are currently using. Just going back to what I said on the Scott City site, you know, we've already got 3 trucks we can remove from the business. By virtue of that study. So that's an example of how we'll free capital up.
Okay, and sorry, just my one last question. There's a bit of housekeeping, really. Slide 27, you've talked about the targets for Southern Cross being, you know, 1,000,010 and 1,050,000. Is that actually production or capacity?
That'll be production.
Okay. So what would you expect capacity maybe to go up to?
Normally we operate, in terms of our uptime, at around about 92%.
Okay.
So you can do the numbers.
Yep, thank you.
Our next question comes from Andrew Scott of JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi guys, thank you. Just a couple of quick ones. First of all, I wonder if you can give us an update on your contractual position at Moranbah. Have you locked any more contracts in above that 39% contractual position you're at when you told us you were going to go ahead with the project? And has your thought process around that changed given what's happened, I guess, with fertiliser prices in the market?
Yeah, look, I'll make a few comments, Andrew, and then Julian may chip in. In terms of the contractual position, we've got 39% of the AN locked away, and we've also got 10%, another 10% of the emulsion. So in other words, we've got around about 50% of the output locked away. In terms of the progress so far on the contracts, I'm pleased to report that we are talking to our customers, both foundation customers and other customers, and we are extremely confident that we'll be able to sell the plant out. And the other good news is we're very confident that it'll be at a price at or above what we've got in our model. So I've gone back and we re-ran the numbers on the acquisition case actually last week, and we're getting numbers still north of 15% IRR. In terms of our thoughts on duration, what you've got to understand is in the explosives business, you sign anything from 3 to 10 year contracts. And so our customers and also ourselves aren't taking a spot view. What you're taking is a view of pricing over those 3 years, or if you went for a 5 year contract over those 5 years. So, you know, our thinking is still we would prefer to keep the contractual position short rather than longer. And the reason for that is we're constructing the plant because we believe over the medium term that there's going to be compelling growth in that region. And why would you lock yourself in when over the medium term the market will be short of product?
Sorry, James, I don't want to labour the point, but just clarify, my understanding from the time of the announcement was that you weren't targeting anywhere near a full contractual position. You wanted that spot flexibility, if you like. Is that still the case, or has that changed?
Sorry, it's Julian, Andrew, and thank you very much for the question. As far as the ammonium nitrate market is concerned, you cannot operate it for logistical purposes on a spot basis the way we do it in fertilizers. You do need to enter a contract for a period of time, given the nature of the mining operations. All that was up for debate was, do we enter in a 2-year contract, 3-year contract, or 10-year contract? And what we're saying is basically our view is We have built this plant because we fundamentally believe there is a need for the product, and if that is the case, there is no reason to tie ourselves up in something like 10-year contract. We believe we can realize more value with shorter-term contracts. But it was never a question of selling it at spot.
Okay, great. Two more. I'll try and keep them quick. Secondly, just the expansions at Southern Cross. Do you need to now look at your rock reserves and think about expanding those? And thirdly, just on the sulfur costs, obviously we've seen a huge variability in sulfur. On your arrangement with Xstrata, there was a period there where you're obviously getting a huge boost for getting that for free. Has there been any point of where they've suggested any sort of discussion or variation on your arrangement there? And could you just remind us exactly when Sun Metals comes up?
Yeah, Andrew, in terms of Southern Cross, we don't need to expand the rock resource in order to do the expansions. In terms of the sulfur dioxide that we get from Xstrata, look, I mean, we are effectively Xstrata's pollution control system by taking that gas, and so it's in both our interests and Xstrata's interest that we continue to do that. We don't see an issue there. I mean, in terms of Sun Metals, that contract did come up. It has been renegotiated, and those rates are still extremely favourable.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Matthew McNee of Goldman Sachs JBWere. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. Most mine have been answered, but just one additional one. Can you just give us a bit of insight into some of the contracts that you have been rolling in North America and also the ones domestically, just on AN, what sort of price increases you are seeing in the market? And you talked about trying to restructure some of those less favourable contracts. I mean, how successful have you been on pushing pricing on those?
Matthew, thank you very much for the questions, Julian. Given that we've been really in control of the business for only 3 months, I think it's really too early for us to comment on this. Remember, most contracts are really on the basis of three years. Negotiation for these contracts normally lasts for quite a number of months. So it's really too early for me to comment on the progress within this last 3 months.
Sorry, Julian, just to follow on that from that, I mean, have you seen the weakness in urea prices and others, you know, elsewhere around the world? Is that going to change the dynamics for you guys as far as you see it, or are you still going to be pushing just as hard for price increases?
Well, as I commented earlier in the presentation, the dynamics of the industrial grade ammonium nitrate market is very different. The importance of local supply is critical to the miners. It is much more difficult to bring ammonium nitrate from imports, given the fact that most shipments of ammonium nitrate are limited to 5,000 to 6,000 tons. So if you want to bring a few hundred thousand tons of ammonium nitrate into any geography, you'll need many, many shipments. Therefore, the reliability of supply becomes a big issue, and also the quality of the product becomes a big issue. So the dynamics in that market are very different than the urea global market, which truly is a global one.
All right, thanks.
Operator, we only have time for one more question and then we need to move on to the second presentation.
Thank you. Your next question comes from John Pertall of Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. Just got a couple of quick ones. Just on page 14 of the presentation, the $42 million trading margin, can you just clarify whether that was in the SEF or the nitrogen SSP business and whether... presumably that's going to be non-recurring as we move forward, given that fertiliser prices are falling. And secondly, probably a question for Julian, just in terms of how you're seeing DAP prices at the moment, and obviously you've got some forecasts there from CRU, but DAP has held up pretty well relative to urea, and do you see that continuing? Thanks.
Yeah, hi, John, and I would note that your surname's Patel. In terms...
The trading.
Oh, yeah, in terms of the trading, I'm sorry. You're right, actually. The trading profit of $47 million is above what we'd normally expect, and purely that's a function of how quickly the prices were moving up. And so if you were trading fertiliser during last year, you tended to make higher than average. We actually think going forward you could maybe take 50% of that number, and that would be more indicative of the type of profitability. I mean, in terms of the products that related to, that was not only our own DAP, but third-party DAP. So we're actually starting to trade third-party product. It's SSP into Latin America, and it's also some urea from Gibson Island that we traded in the period.
I think, John, your other question was regarding DAP prices. My view is that at the moment we are going through a period, and it's typical for this time of the year, that really the market is not that liquid, and it's really very difficult to actually form an opinion of what the long-term trend is going to be. Our view is that we really need to wait, excuse me, until after Christmas to see where the prices are settling. But in essence, what we've seen up to now is good discipline in the market. And obviously, the Australian dollar rate of exchange is very helpful to us, as the impact on our business is very much a mix of the global price in combination with the rate of exchange.
John, one other thing I'd add is we've made a decision in our business to supply 100% of the DAP for our distribution business, which, of course, we sell in April, May and June, from Southern Cross. And so at the moment our intention wouldn't be to export for the next few months, purely because the market is quite soft and the volumes aren't huge. And to take that volume, and rather than importing DAP like we normally do, to sell it through our distribution business. This really shows the strength of the business model. And of course, if we get good rainfall, we'll be able to pull much more profit through the distribution business. If we end up at the end of the season and it hasn't rained, then we'll just simply pick the product up from ports like Geelong and Port Adelaide and export it. And because of that, that's why on the profit report you see the seasonality different to what you'd normally expect. We're saying the first half will be 30 to 35%. Normally you'd expect 40 to 45%, but essentially we've taken exports from the first half and pushed them into sales through our distribution business in the second half.
Thanks,
John. We'll now move to our next call, and I'll ask the operator to move to that call now. Operator, could you disconnect the party?
This concludes today's conference. Thank you, everyone, for your participation.